Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this October the 27th on the West Coast, now October the 28th on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zone. And, of course, anywhere east of the Eastern Time Zone as well. We want to welcome those listening in around the world on Wind Talkers Radio Network as well. We've got a pretty interesting show tonight. It's going to be kind of deep and, if I can say, very thought-provoking and very spiritual. And I'm going to ask you to keep an open mind, but more so than an open mind, an open heart. We've got a guest that is quite an expert on those matters, both on the mind and on the heart, and he's been putting out a message for many years in regard to the reality of existence as far as a human being goes, and really life in general throughout the universe. He has a profound understanding of the works of others as well as his own studies, and he's acknowledged many philosophers and psychiatrists and psychologists' work and incorporated some of their materials into their own, because if one's telling the truth, obviously you've got to acknowledge it and don't shun it just because you weren't the messenger who originally delivered it. I have to tell you, we're going to be discussing two books that I just received from our guest, and we're going to be delving into some solutions and some definitions and explanations as to who we are and what we are, where we come from, and where we're going to go. Before I do that, however, bring him on the show, I'm going to play some music, which I hope will open that pathway to your heart and your imagination. I'm going to play an Eric Clapton song. I know I have a lot of Clapton fans out there. This song is entitled My Father's Eyes, and I caution you, as you listen to the lyrics, to consider that this has a double meaning. Again, Eric Clapton and My Father's Eyes.
My father's eyes.
father's eyes, Eric Clapton. And with that, I'm going to bring on tonight's guest. He hosts his own show on BBSRadio.com, heard every other Saturday on BBS Radio, Zero Point, and he is a prolific author. We've discussed on some past shows his book, The Heart Doctrine, and we're going to discuss two other pieces, volumes, really, that he's authored. And I welcome back clinical psychologist and metaphysical researcher and metaphysician, even, my good friend Christopher Holmes, PhD. Christopher, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. Thanks for having me back, and I appreciated your show. I listen to your shows regularly whenever I can, and thank you for accepting the gift of the two books I sent you. And I wanted to mention, Don, I send them to you. I don't expect you to kind of have time to kind of get through them all, and I don't mean to encumber you taking demands on your time. You know, your researches that you do are so invaluable to us, and I just send them to you because I hope to, you know, I think they're useful for you. The more informed you are of these areas, it just enriches your own work.
Oh, yes.
I send my work to you particularly because I find you so embody things that you embody naturally things I'm trying to talk about, and I feel that emotional affinity with you.
Well, I appreciate your kind words. I want to say that I am anxious. In fact, I started reading your book, Psychological Illusions, and, of course, I see what you're saying in your comments, but you're reminding me of many things I forgot or some of the things I studied when I first began my own path and my own research, not necessarily politics or government and those things, but certainly understanding and questioning life, what my purpose in life is and was and what it will become. And I think your work embodies the reminder that everything is an eternal now. It's one big episode that's occurring, and it all impacts, every moment impacts everything else. And we tend to think in a linear fashion, but the way you write and the truths that you bring forth show that these things are occurring on multiple dimensions simultaneously, and that really we must become conscious and aware and knowledgeable about who we really are and what we are really capable of doing. Please.
Well, that's expressed so nicely. Absolutely. You see, I've explored now for over 40 years this issue of human consciousness and psychology as a science of the soul, because I see now how the whole of modern education and science and academia has denied the existence of the human spirit and soul. And even if you go back to the protocols of Zion, you see in one of the protocols, they want to promote Darwinianism, Marxism, and existentialism. And when I first attended university, that was what I got. You know, I went in as a Christian, and I came out as a Darwinian, Marxist, and existentialist. And it was only after that that I began to discover mystical and esoteric teachings. And I began with the Gurdjieff Uspensky Fourth Way teaching. And then for the last 40 years, I've studied different esoteric teachings, including things like Kabbalah and esoteric Judaism, Sufism, yogic teachings. And the main area and interest of mine has always been the nature of human consciousness and the nature and existence of the human spirit and soul and what these things are from a scientific perspective. And this whole approach to psychology has been completely neglected in modern educational system and in the culture that we're in. So I'm kind of a scholar and interpreter to try to bridge the gap between the mystical traditions and modern science to show how these mystical teachings are very profound and they offer us a new model of the nature of existence, like what we are as beings and how multidimensional existence actually works. So it's a very alternative way of thinking and understanding.
Very, very well put. Before we get into, now I refer to him as Gurdjieff, but I'll use the Gurdjieff pronunciation if you're more comfortable with that.
Well, Don, you know, some I don't even know myself, and I'll even vary from one moment to the other. So, I'm not sure I have the correct pronunciation.
Yeah, I think it's Gurdjieff, being Greek, okay?
Yeah.
They would say it that way. And, of course, his first name, George, and his middle name, Ivanovich.
Yeah.
So it's a mixture. I want to just mention the fact that I chose to open the show with a song and to demonstrate that there are many artists, many musicians, you know, even actors. There are some actors that are really, really open to these concepts. They're multidimensional in their understanding of what their work is about, and they're all messengers of a sort. If you look at it that way, an artist is a silent messenger that touches the senses, the visual senses, and tugs on our heartstrings and on our imagination. A musician can do the same things, painting pictures with sounds and telling stories with sounds. And I know that from the time that Eric Clapton lost his son, and that is a very dark experience, and I think that was probably something that occurred to keep him in line with what they wanted him to do. But miraculously, he was able to bring out a lot of new music and bring out a very profound spiritual message in that music and have it played on pop radio as if it was just a new pop tune, if you get my meaning. When you listen to him talking about God and his beliefs and you understand behind the scenes, he was exposed to a lot of Satanism. They tried to recruit him into this foul, depraved existence to make his music affect people in a negative way, but he refused to do that. Certainly, with a song like that, there are a couple I would like to play on the show tonight, but I'm not going to do that. Maybe toward the end of the show, I might play one more song, or from another artist that again has that same mission. Messengers, and Gurdjieff was a messenger. He was someone who taught many people to understand these spiritual truths and really dissect all the dogma and the tradition and the rituals that people practiced and still practice today without even questioning why. It's just done and you accept it. If you want to be accepted amongst your peers, you have to do these things, and no one ever asks why those things are done. But I know also in your writing, and I don't want to deviate from this work that we're talking about, because the other book where you zero in on H.P. Blavatsky's work in regard to music and universal laws that apply to music, these things really fit together like a, you know, hand in glove. They're not separable in a sense. In fact, what we're taught is separation, and what we struggle with is all because we accept separation as our reality, when I think my personal opinion is that we were never separated. We were just always told that we were. What are your thoughts on that? And I know I threw a lot at you there.
So. Yeah, you did. And I'd like to take it back to just comment on the Clapton song. Clapton, It's a beautiful song. And yeah, exactly. See, music is the language of the soul. And there's more knowledge about the nature of the soul in music than there is in modern science or academia. Like, there's no knowledge there, but artists who sing from themselves have intuitive heart knowledge. And when I hear a song like that from Clapton, like, he's talking in that song, he's talking about recovering his soul. And towards the end, he kind of like questions, how did I lose it? And, I hear in the song, looking into his father's eyes, to me is like awakening and realizing himself. Like, firstly, I take father to be God, not his physical father, but God. He's talking about looking into Christ or God's eyes. And that, in a way, eyes are mirrors of the soul. And somehow looking into my father's eyes, it reminds him of who he are, and it evokes in him remorse of conscience. And Gurdjieff sees remorse of conscience as the most important emotion to elicit in people to help them change their ways. When they wake up and they say, my God, what have I done? How did I do this? What has become of me? How have I lost my soul? And in that song, it's like he's recovering his soul. He's lost his child, and it's broken him down, and he's trying to recover his soul life and feel the joyousness of the heart. And it was a beautiful song. So, yeah, I absolutely agree. I think music is more the language and science of the soul than we have. In modern times, people don't have any understanding of these issues, generally.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the music. And then you mentioned, I guess the three books I have, maybe I could just touch briefly on each of them to explain them.
Sure.
The Heart Doctrine, the subtitle is Mystical Views of the Origin and Nature of Human Consciousness. And it's an attempt to show that the last century of modern science has been a complete fraud, that the brain in the head never produced human consciousness. But such a view, which I call the Head Doctrine, has been the dogma for over a century. And you see, the issues of consciousness are related to the issues of the soul, because in the mystical perspective, consciousness is a symptom of the living entity in the human being. It is the light of this living self within us. So from a mystical point of view, consciousness originates out of the heart. It's not produced by the brain in the head. But what in mystics say that human beings, they don't know themselves. They don't have any real self-knowledge. In fact, they accept this false ego centered in the mind, in the head, and it's based on all the conditioning and socialization that they've undergone. But they lose touch with their essential self within the heart. So self-realization is described as involving the dissolution of the false mind into the lotus of the heart. So it's about trying to recover this essential heart consciousness. So the first book is a study of the mysteries of the human consciousness. And then my Blavatsky book is called God, Science, and the Secret Doctrine. And it's a study of Blavatsky's book published in 1888 called The Secret Doctrine. And this is a classic book of Western occultism. And Manly Hall, a famous scholar and 33rd degree Mason, said of the Secret Doctrine, he described it as undoubtedly the magnum opus of the literature of the modern world. And it's a massive two-book set. And the first is called Cosmogenesis and deals with the creation of the universe. And the second is called Anthropogenesis, and it's the creation and evolution of humankind on this planet from the earliest races up to the present time. So this book on Blavatsky, it focuses on book one of The Secret Doctrine. And what I do is compare Blavatsky's views of creation to modern physics and cosmology. And there's absolutely astonishing relationships in ways one sees that Blavatsky predicted over 100 years ago all of the most current ideas in modern science, including ideas about vacuum genesis, or creation out of the nothingness, a creation from point sources, what's called in science singularities. Blavatsky talks about seven-dimensional hyperspace. He talks about expanding, contracting universes, multiple universes. Many, many of the modern ideas in science were in Blavatsky over a century ago. So that book on God, Science, and the Secret Doctrine, it explains Blavatsky's archaic secret doctrine and relates it all to modern physics. And it actually gets into very difficult and advanced areas, looking at the holographic physics that's emerging in the newest physics. Because Blavatsky has this alternate model of how creation is founded on zero-point centers that exist in hyperspace dimensions. It's all very complex to explain, but so that book, it deals in a way with the mysteries of creation, comparing mystical accounts of creation with modern science and showing how similar those two perspectives are. And then the third book is on the Gurdjieff teaching, and the Gurdjieff teaching is a very practical psychology, explaining all about like the parts of a human being and levels of consciousness and how people are asleep and how to wake up. And it's a very practical psychology. And I've used that book, Psychological Illusions. I used to use it 30 years ago when I was a professor in university. And then I even used that in my work with prisoners in prison, because in most prisons now they have cognitive behavioral modification. And I developed an alternative approach to called the awakening of consciousness and the heart in criminal offenders. So it was a new approach to correctional work. And I would use the Gurdjieff book in my work with offenders to try to help them develop their own self-knowledge and become more conscious of themselves intentionally. So I've had a long history, the Gurdjieff book. Each of the three books is really quite separate, and
Yet the principles within each of them tie everything together. that's the beauty of your work in that. And I suppose in the minds of some, you know, someone that's been brought up with, let's say, a strict Christian upbringing, and the denomination really doesn't matter. If they're learning the truth, they will learn the first thing is that Christ never asked anyone to establish a church in his name or start a religion. He was the messenger. He delivered a message, and it was the power and the truth in that message that changed the frequencies on this planet. Now, that's a very general statement to make, and we could just talk about that the rest of the show. I don't mean to go off on a tangent, but in terms of Blavatsky's writing and Gurdjieff's writings, many people say, well, those were mystical writings, and those became the property of the secret societies. They saw the truths in those, and they used those, sort of in an alchemical kind of way, if you get my meaning. They used the power to negatively influence power and control over others. And that really wasn't the intention of either of those two authors and teachers. Do you agree with that, or?
Oh, absolutely. Like, they would not want the masses of people to be aware of the teachings of the secret doctrine or of Gurdjieff's psychology. In fact, neither of those are taught anywhere in the educational system. Like their works that have been suppressed. They haven't wanted people to be empowered with spiritual knowledge. So these influences have been kept out of away from people. And they themselves, like the Satanist Luciferian goofballs behind all the things going on our planet, like they're into black magic and use principles of what I might teach, but in a dark way.
Yes.
Neither Blavatsky nor Gurdjieff were of the black path, like the left-handed path, it would be called. And I think, I don't know if theosophy as a movement was corrupted after Blavatsky. That may have happened, because what happened after Blavatsky, Annie Besant, who was a Fabian socialist, and Leadbeater, who was a homosexual pedophile priest, kind of took over the leadership of theosophy. And I think at that point, they got away, and the Blavatsky material, Blavatsky herself was kind of ostracized almost from some of her society before the end of her life. And they tried to, like the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of the Claims of the Paranormal, an older version of that tried to expose Blavatsky and discredit her. So Blavatsky's work, I would say, was very threatening to the establishment and to the elites. And she went on about the Jesuits and the Black Pope and the kind of evil in the Catholic Church. So Blavatsky's work was not popular in ways among the elites. At the same time, she was highly recognized and was inducted into Masonry, Scottish Freemasonry, because of their recognition of her work. Even people like Aleister Crowley, like everybody studies Blavatsky, is like the grandmother of Western occultism. So she's very honored. But generally, people have no idea what her work's about.
Mm-hmm. Now, you reminded me of in your work on Gurdjieff, the Enneagram, hieroglyph of universal language was in a book that I was shown during my second near-death experience.
Wow.
I saw the master book. And I spent time with four angels reading this book.
Wow.
I'd even had the experience of seeing Christ. I met him in my first experience. And in my second experience, I was told that he was busy. He was occupied with something very important and that I couldn't disturb his work. But at the same time, I sat down and read this book. And I recognized this immediately. I'm just
It is an absolutely profound symbol. My book opens with it. On the first page of my book, I quote Gurdjieff, who says, "A man may be quite alone in the desert, and he can trace the Enneagram in the sand, and in it read the eternal laws of the universe." And what the Enneagram is, it's a nine-pointed symbol, and it has an inner triangle, and then six additional points, which are joined in a particular way. And as a symbol, it embodies what Gurdjieff explains are the two fundamental cosmic laws, laws of 3 and 7. And the idea of these laws of 3 and 7, you find this concept throughout the mystical literature, but no one in modern times has understood really the significance of it. But those are said to be three fundamental laws governing existence. You see it also in the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. In the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, you have three pillars, and you have 10 spheres on three pillars. And there's the upper three spheres, which are called the supernals. And then you have 7 spheres below, which are the created worlds. And the 3 above and the 7 below give a 10. And that's the mystical symbol of Kabbalah. It embodies also the laws of 3 and 7. So this Enneagram is this archaic symbol that has a lot of meaning to it, and I have drawn it in the sand a number of times.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was interesting is when I was reading this book, it was revealed to me through spirit that my primary numbers pertaining to my name and my purpose, my calling in life, were 3, 5, 9, and 7. And 9, you see where that is. Just according to this Enneagram.
Yeah.
So.
This whole concept of this, Blavatsky says in the Secret Doctrine, she says 7 is the number of the divine mysteries. Okay. You find this in the book of Genesis. God creates the world in 6 days and rests on the 7th. The law of 7 is in the first book of Genesis. Okay, it's also in Vedic teaching. There is said to be creation of 7 worlds or 7 degrees of Maya or cosmic illusion. In all the mystical teachings, everything in nature, in physical nature and metaphysical nature, is sevenfold. And it is said to embody also the law of the octave. Because if you complete 7 notes, you complete the 7 in the 8th note.
Mm-hmm.
As if you go up a musical scale from do to the successive do. And that's so sometimes the law is called the law of 7, sometimes it's called the law of the octave, but they're related in that way. So
yes.
This idea of the law of 7, in mystical teachings it's said a human being has 7 chakras in the subtle anatomy, okay, or that human beings can attain 7 levels of human development. But most human beings are only man number 1, 2, or 3, according to Gurdjieff. He explained they're either physically, emotionally, or intellectually centered. Very few people develop physically, emotionally, and mentally, and then attain to the 4th level, which is the awakening of the I within the heart. So very few people attain to that next level of human evolution, which is the awakening. For Gurdjieff, it's called the higher emotional center. So this idea is very important, the sevenfoldness. And in my book on Blavatsky, I relate that all into modern physics and show its application in physics. Because the newest model of higher dimensions proposes that every point in our world, it really extends into a 7-dimensional hyperspace, that anything that manifests in the 4 large space-time dimensions is really a product of forces occurring within this 7-dimensional hyperspace. So this idea that there's 7-dimensional hyperspace underlying physical reality is a basic teaching of the esoteric Blavatsky and the Secret Doctrine. So the idea of the laws of 3 and 7 are very, very valuable.
Mm-hmm. Now the 5, I understood to mean responsibility to human existence or to humanity.
Well, that applies in Gurdjieff the way that I would interpret that. Gurdjieff says a human being has 7 centers. But 5 of them are responsible for normal psychology and our normal everyday life. And he says a perfected person attains the pentagram, he says. He locks the pentagram in himself. So that's a step in your evolution, is to lock the pentagram in yourself. And the pentagram stands for the perfected man. And then that represents in your lower nature, and then there's the 2 higher centers, which the symbol for a perfected man would be the Star of David with a central point, which is 2 triangles representing the spiritual material nature of man, and you put a central point in that Star of David. You look at the flag of Israel, there's no central point in it. The flag of Israel, that Star of David is empty, and it has that symbol has 6 sides, 6 angles, and 2 threes, so it's a 666. It represents 666. The mystery of the Star of David is to put a 7th point in the center, and then it changes everything. And that's what we want to aspire to, is the Star of David with a central point. Blavatsky puts the Ankh as the seventh element in the center. The Ankh is the Egyptian symbol for the living entity in the human being. So it's like the Star of David in the flag of Israel and the Rothschild Red Shield. It's empty inside because they are soulless creatures.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that. Now, you weren't prepared for me to even bring this topic up, but in the context of what I had read, you reminded me, and I'm repeating myself, but you had reminded me of my previous studies and also my previous experiences that confirm it on another level, that all of this is true. So I just wanted to share that with you. So
yeah, that's good. We need to be reminded of these things. It's like we have this absolutely horrific, tragic scenario unfolding on the world stage at this time in human history. Like, we're really in a precarious time where the kind of psychopathic elites around the world are carrying forth their genocidal plans, and they're kind of taking us into further wars, and they're impoverishing people, they're poisoning people through the chemtrails and the water and the food. I mean, if you look at the world situation around us, we realize that these psychopathic elites are really very psychotically disturbed, and they are the real terrorists in modern society. You know, they've always been the terrorists. It wasn't Muslims, you know. As I say, Osama bin Laden and his reindeer did not make those two towers fall down each in 15 seconds into their own footprints. I mean, like, people have to wake up in the world. You know, the media has so deceived people and created a whole false consciousness system. The masses of the public actually have a delusional system. Really, it's a delusion to think that Osama bin Laden and the stories we've been told about 9/11, to believe that is delusional, meaning false ideas, false belief. It's a complete fraud. So this whole delusional system has been perpetrated on the American people through your media, and it's been going on for decades. That's why America is, like, for decades been a terrorist nation, terrorizing and murdering, mass murdering people around the world. Okay, mm-hmm. But the people at home are all, you know, you show and make a movie and you're all heroes and you're saving people and restoring justice around the world and you're big heroes, and they completely brainwash the public. Meanwhile, America is going around the world just like the Nazis did, trying to have a worldwide empire, you know, and perpetrating all these crimes against humanity, all in the name of the American people. Now, finally, the American people are waking up to this and realize that, you know, we have very serious trouble in our nations today. You know, we're on a precipice.
Yeah, Europe went through this twice, in World War I, World War II, and there were many other wars that occurred as well. And we've not been told the truth about those wars. We've been taught to believe in a pre-designed script that was intended to lead us exactly where we are today. There's no doubt about that. With all the evidence is there. And the reason I bring that up is because Gurdjieff described our state of consciousness, and I don't think he just meant the American people. He wasn't really talking about the Americans so much.
No.
As he was as mankind in general. But he said that we're sort of walking in a, we sleep, and then when we're awake, we're walking in sort of a hypnotic or a waking sleep. He said, man lives his life in sleep, and in sleep he dies. So he's basically saying we're unconscious.
Yeah, people are not properly conscious. Instead, he explains how we form a false consciousness system, which covers our essence, and that begins early on through socialization and the educational system. All the rubbish accumulated through the centuries in human thought and mentation. So a person they lose their essence, and people live in this state of not being properly conscious. They're always caught up in the moment. They're controlled by everything happening around them. They live in sleep. And for Gurdjieff says, if a man is in prison and he's condemned to die, there's only one thing, how to escape, how to be free. Well, people are like that. They're imprisoned by their sleep. The only serious thing is to wake up out of your sleep. You know, in the Gurdjieff teaching, see, it's very important to realize some people think, you have a soul, and other people say there's no soul. Gurdjieff is very interesting how he says, we all have the potential to acquire our souls, but as a person lives, you can fail to attain that. And then he says a person can die like a dog, die like a one and two brain being, and they only feed the moon upon their death, but they don't have continued existence into afterlife planes. He says, mm-hmm. Gurdjieff explains, we have to attain our higher being bodies for the life of the soul. And that's what it means to attain your soul.
Well, yeah, you have to recognize it's there and listen to it, because it's constantly trying to tell us who we are and what we should do, but we don't listen. We're really ignorant of those things. And that's what makes this so exciting to talk about, really.
That's exactly as Gurdjieff says, too. He says, our true consciousness has passed into what we call the subconscious. So he says that we still have this higher emotional center connected to our hearts, but we've lost that, and we have to recover that essential identity.
Mm-hmm. Or reestablish the connection and mm-hmm. maybe amplify it.
Yeah.
And raise it in frequency, because through frequency control, it's been sort of muted in a way, not entirely muted. You know, these days, when you see a mute button, it silences it. But if I'm playing a trumpet and I put a mute in the trumpet, it changes the coloration of the sound. Or a mute on a violin does the same thing, makes the instrument play softer, and there are many other instruments that use mutes. The point I'm saying here is that when you bombard the senses with images, you cause certain aspects of the true nature of how we operate, how we function in a universal context, and you cripple those sensory processes that occur. The light body being one. If you bombard the senses with stories of darkness and despair and fear, it dims the light. And you see people walking around depressed and tired and discouraged and fearful, not knowing what to do. And it brings up a question I want to ask you. I've been dying to ask you this question for a few months. Since the last time you were on the show, you know, with all the email going around telling everybody, well, this was discovered and this is going on. And, you know, I mean, I even write about this stuff. But I'm trying to bring the truth about what we've been told forward. In other words, I'm demonstrating that we've been lied to about history, or we've been lied to about who these people are. Or that they're even people, you know, and we've just been lied to about everything. And so part of what I do is to bring out the discoveries of, hey, wait a minute, this person says their name is this, but that's not who they are. And this is who they are. And this is why they did what they did, and why they're doing what they're doing now. And this is what they plan on doing in the future. It has to, initiate some kind of a response in a reader or a listener to hear this information and to learn it, and at least to consider that it might be very accurate, might be true. And if it is, what are we going to do about it? Well, we should stop relying on that information. And with all the doom and gloom that mainstream media gives us, You get an email telling you, oh, Congress passed this law. Now we have to focus on this. Now we're going to suffer this way. Now we're going to be without this. We have to spend more money. You know, we're just assaulted in all these different ways. And I'm at the point where I just want to vomit. You know, I want to get that pea soup out of me, if you get my meaning. Do you feel that as well? Do those feelings come upon you that you want to just refocus everyone's attention on the matter at hand, which is what we're talking about now, reestablishing our connection with the Creator and the rest of the universe, and coming to a conscious realization about who we are, who we can become, and what we can do to change things here. That's a mouthful again. I apologize, but
I do think that. I mean, we need people. We need to awaken humankind to get back to this, like to refocus. Like, who are we on this planet? How could we let these things be done to us and be done on the planet? We have to recover our soul lives. Like, people are in danger of losing their souls in a way. You see people, it's like they're more and more like zombies or robots. And it's like the elites have fostered this in every way they can. They fostered every type of degeneracy, like through the media, through the violence, through the video games, through the music. They fostered degeneracy in every aspect of our culture. And you see it more and more and hear it on the radio, on the TV. And they've demeaned people. They've lately been producing all these quack science books about God is not great and the God delusion. All their, what Gurdjieff would call Hasnamas sciences, which is, yeah. So there is, you know, people need to, you know, we're in troubled times, but we all have to deal with this issue of attaining our own soul. Even if we face death, we want to go into that in more of an awakened state rather than in an asleep state, in which case a person's taken into the underworld, in my view. See, I believe that people can pass at death into different realms. Some people are under the control of the moon, and they actually they pass to the moon and live there in a form of servitude. And people could, there are like hell worlds and afterlife worlds. See, I believe we do live in a multidimensional existence, and there are afterlife states and planes of existence we can attain. So we need a rediscovery of our spiritual nature. And we, you know, it's so terrible. You look at the Christian churches, like the Christian churches today, they would make me puke. I would want to spew them out. But where are the Christians, like, protesting these wars? Like, Christians, there's no Christianity anymore. You don't see it in the world. You see how the elites have perverted even the major mainstream religions.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a troubling time, but the issues of the soul life and attaining our soul is for each of us profoundly important, and people need to wake up to this. You know, time is short. Like, there may be a culling going on here, and some pretty major events may unfold on Earth. So even if there are many people passing, you want to attain to more favorable conditions. We have to save our souls.
Yeah.
In a way, the elites are soulless creatures, and they possess people through hyperspace dimensions, through the physics of people's hearts. It's like how the Satan possesses people through the heart, and he controls them through their lower motives. Of money, sex, and power, the three lower chakras below the heart. But these elites, like, they're unbelievably greedy. They're like, you know, they would put pigs to shame. You look at the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, and these people own half the wealth of the world. And really, the whole time, they've been the terrorists. So really, we should seize all their assets around the world and imprison them so that we can try to give them some psychoeducation and possibly release them again. But but really, you know, they're unbelievably greedy, and they're absolutely perverse with all their sexual turns and tricks and pedophilia and bestiality, everything. They try to promote every possible sexual deviancy known to humankind, and some that they newly invent. And then power. They're obsessed with power. Like you hear little Henry Kissinger says, you know, power is my aphrodisiac, you know. That's because he must be very impotent in who he is as a being. You know, and he's obsessed with power. So how are these people obsessed with money, sex, and power? Yeah, and they call themselves elites? Like, really, they're not elites. You know, they're the scum that rose to the top of the waters of life. And we in human society, people around the world, upright of heart, who still have some essential soul life in their heart, we have to wake up and join forces around the world to rid our society of these people. To you know, to rein them in and take back our society. You know, America, you know, I love America as a country. I wish the best of American people. You know, you have to take your country back. In Canada, we have the same thing. We're run by a mafia up here in Canada, too. So this is a problem around the world, and people now are waking up to it. And these people have deceived us, and they've limited our society in every way possible. In our education, in our health care, in environmental issues, everything they can possibly poison, they do. So, you know, it's an urgent time, I think, for humankind around this planet to wake up to what's been done to us, and to collectively we have to, you know, have the courage to make the efforts to take back our countries.
Mm-hmm. I guess what I was saying in my statement prior to your comments, and I agree with what you're saying, everything, I have developed a sort of intolerance to keep retreading. You know, it's like you're asked to jump back on the hamster wheel with the other hamsters, if you know what I mean. And it's time that we graduate from this fear of what they say they're going to do, what's coming down, and get to the business of recreating the outcome that we would prefer. And I would think most people, you could start with the word peace. There are those that say, oh, peace is never going to exist on the earth. Well, if you get rid of mankind, it'll be there immediately. I mean, all of mankind, purge the planet of any life form, there will be peace on Earth. And the Earth can set about her business of healing and then maybe accepting another life form that's more respectful. This, how much arguing do we need to do about the truth behind that statement? You know, or the truth about what we're doing to the earth, or what these insane ideologies and political strategies are doing to all life, the destruction of all life. So you did answer the question. Yeah? You're feeling the same thing, and I know many of our listeners feel the same thing. The reason I ask that, then, is because we come to a point then, okay, what do we do? And everyone who listens to us and agrees with what we're saying, then says, well, when are you going to do this for me or for us? And we're trying to say you are all, each, every one of you, individually and then collectively responsible for your life, your future, what you create in your life, and what you haven't done in your life is also a result of your creation. You've created the emptiness of not doing anything about anything. And that comes back to that word responsibility. We have to recognize that we have a responsibility to ourselves first. First of all, the other guy's not concerned whether I eat today or tomorrow. Very few people ask me, well, you know, did you eat today, Don? Were you able to find something to drink, some water maybe? You know, are you healthy? People don't really care. They sort of say, how's it going? And expect me to say, oh, it's great, or I'm miserable. You know, we're living such superficial lives in terms of who we are in our connection with the universe. You want to comment on that at all?
Well, I don't think you lead a superficial life, Dom. It's because of your work. Gurdjieff talks about conscious labors and intentional suffering. In a way, you undertake conscious labors to try to help the human condition. I mean, that's my motivation at this time in my life. I mean, I'm older now, and my kids are grown up and independent, and in a way, I'm an elder, and you know, I care for humankind. It breaks my heart to see all these children murdered around the world and all these terrible things being done to people. It's like, I think if a person awakens in your heart, then you feel compassion for humankind in a different way. And, you know, all the children of the world, in some sense, are my children. So in a way, what I see happening in the world, it outrages me morally. I'm a double Libra, so I have a very strong sense of human justice, and it's like there's absolutely no justice in our society. You know, the people who did 9/11, they walk away with their billions laughing. You know, they laugh the dumb, stupid soldiers who go over and fight their wars. You know, and they meanwhile, the stock jugglers are making billions and giving themselves bonuses after putting the American society in debt for the next 1,000 years. You know, they've stolen the wealth of your nations. What's happening around the world is tragic, unbelievable tragedy to it. But that's just one side of it. And I mean, at times I get tired. I've had to back off of being political so much because, in a way, I try to do what I can to help the world situation. And I think my writings are really very valuable in this time because they're quite unique, the science of consciousness and kind of mystical view of creation and the Gurdjieff teachings, very practical, helpful to people. So I guess we each do what we can. Your original researches are profoundly valuable, Don, and you kind of gained a reputation, and, you know, people talk on the show as Don Nikoloff, you know. So, you've been so far ahead of the ball on so many of these issues. So that's what we're doing. I mean, I have a meaningful life, you know, to attain my soul, and at the same time, I have like a world stage I'm concerned about is the problems of humanity.
Yeah, that's certainly where my concerns are and the statements I'm making and even, you know, the questions that I might ask, regardless of what guest I have on the show. I'm trying to elicit a confirmation or even if it's a correction, if it's a redirection, as long as we're all headed in the right direction. I guess each individual has to make that choice. And I learned that some time ago that, you can sing to the choir and eventually even the choir gets tired of the songs in the songbook. They want a new songbook. But they're always waiting for someone to lead them. And, It's beyond that. I see it. Maybe it's just because of my own perspective. It's not out of an unwillingness to help others, but you encounter denial, or you encounter outright ignorance or disbelief, if you want to use that word. But when you have the knowledge, when you have the experience, it really doesn't matter what they say or think. They're wallowing basically in their own constructs, their own creations. and very dissatisfied with them.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm speaking, you know, on that spiritual level, this thing about awakening people so that they can muster up enough courage to follow that path on their own for a short time to awaken the real inner self and make that higher connection, even make the connection with the Creator.
Yeah.
And the craving to see death and destruction, really, you know, we're shown that to produce fear, it's crippling, it's paralyzing in a way. It's self-deprecating in another way, of subconsciously. And then the individual feels like, well, none of this, nothing has any real value or real meaning. It's not worth it. I guess I just have to try to last it out as long as I can, knowing that I'm going to die. So we're shown images of people dying to give us the feeling, well, I escaped death today. You know, I want to see what a dead person looks like because I'm alive. It's confirmation I'm alive. When in reality, you're the next in line, or maybe you know, a few hundred down the line.
Well,
it's like waiting.
It's interesting at the end of Gurdjieff's book, Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson, which is this kind of massive story he wrote. He says there's only one thing that can save people on the planet Earth, and that is if they have an organ implanted in them that reminds them all the time of the inevitability of their own death and the death of everybody about them. And the idea of that is that, like, if you realize, like, your vulnerability and the inevitability of death, like, if you knew you had a week to live, like, all of a sudden you wake up, a lot of things would fall away as meaningless and trivial in your life. Like, who cares who wins a baseball game? Like, good God, you know, like, it's like how you get 60,000 people, they fill their lives with baseball and football and basketball, men playing games with balls. You know, your nation's murdering people around the world, you're being poisoned, people are being impoverished, all these, and everybody's going out and attending to men playing games with balls. You see, it's like the psychopathology of humankind. So, I'm not sure what my point was.
Well, I guess I'm, you know, I'm making a statement, but I'm sort of describing how I see us headed down this path of life, and this waking sleep that Gurdjieff talked about. It's really how one feels when you talk to someone about 9/11 and they say, oh, you don't really believe that happened. Well, I can say, oh, you don't really believe that they put an airplane through a 16-foot hole. You know, it's got a wingspan of, what, 121 feet, and they fit all that through a 16-foot hole. Even David Copperfield hasn't pulled that trick off.
People are completely conditioned. It's this complete false consciousness system. I mean, people think you have an honest government, whereas really we've had criminal cabals who have gained ascendancy in our society. Our governments don't serve us. I mean, the idea that we live in a democracy is a farce because, you know, you can vote Republican or Democrat and both of them are owned by the same underlying shadow government. I mean, it's a farce, and people can't face these things. In a way, see, people are empty inside. Gurdjieff calls them terrestrial nullities. They're empty inside, and so they're living in fearfulness. And the only way to overcome that inner emptiness is through kind of reactivating that self-awareness, the consciousness of the heart, to recover that soul level within yourself. So this is part of what people are facing in modern times. And a lot of people just go into fear and can't face it. But I think those of us who do awaken, I mean, I feel responsible to do what I can in whatever way I can to try to help at this time.
Yeah, it's obvious that all are not going to awaken.
No.
Many are destined to remain asleep. And I mean in terms of waking consciousness, realizing that we have been pitted against each other in a sense of competition, and that's the purpose of professional sports, which has become now entertainment. It's not even athleticism anymore. They call Texas Hold'em and other poker games that they show on television on almost every single channel, including the sports channels, they're calling it a sport. It's ridiculous. I thought gambling was an addiction. Now, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, the media are professional liars. That they're professional deceivers and liars, and they use every means possible to distract people from the most significant things going on. You know, you'll get whether or not Britney Spears has underwear on will be a big news item, you know. The fact that 1,000 engineers say 9/11 was an inside job doesn't matter, you know, that's not on any media. I mean, the media, their role, they're paid by these people. Their role is to perpetrate this mass hypnosis on Western society. And that's what they've done. They've done it very well. The media has done their job, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That is their job. Their job isn't to inform the public, but their job has been for the last century to deceive the public so that a cabal of criminals has been able to perpetrate all these crimes around the world and against the American people, and no one ever realized it. Kind of. I mean, that's exaggerating because people did realize it at different times, but I didn't wake up till 5 years ago. You know, I had no idea of the extent of the criminality of our government until I woke up to 9/11. And you know, that changed my world. And it's not been the same since, all the things I've been through over the past 5 years. And it is hard to know what to do. I don't know what to do. I mean, you know, what can we do? You know? I just try to stick at what I do and try to think of what I might do next and take one step at a time.
Well, I think we, and I don't just mean you and I, but those of us that are doing this research and bringing a lot of this information forward in our radio shows, in our writings, and in our guest appearances on other shows, we are doing our best to show the people that, as you just said, the media is nothing more than professional liars. They're basically prostitutes for the Tavistock Institute of Human Studies, where all of these things were orchestrated. Now, you're originally from England. I don't know how much time you spent there growing up, but
just a couple of years.
You've heard of Tavistock, though, have you not?
Yeah, I understand. The Tavistock, you know, it's interrelated to the Royal Institute of International Affairs and then the Trilateral Commission, CFR. All these roundtable groups are all the same psychopaths, you know, with all their different think tanks to try to, you know, they're eugenicists who kind of have this plan for world domination and population reduction. And they've completely socially engineered our society for over the past 50 years. Through all of my life, I've grown up within their socially engineered environment. You know, they've degraded the education. They've tried to undermine spiritual and religious values in society. They give us completely fraudulent accounts of the wars and what really happened and who was behind it all. You know, people are deceived about absolutely everything. You realize the corporate media has, you know, the inoculations, the poisons people are forced to put into their bodies from early ages. You know, and they've done this. And that's in the protocols of Zion. It's one of their methods of genocide and spreading illness is inoculations.
Yes.
You know, so we've grown up in this completely social engineered society and completely deceived the whole way through. You know, Americans kind of thought, we got free press in the United States. Yeah, free press. How many corporate media people have expressed any truth about 9/11? And you call that a free press? It's absurd.
Name a newspaper that's free.
Yeah, I wouldn't want most newspapers.
I joked.
In Ottawa here, I remember last time I read the Ottawa Citizen, it was all this editorial letter about how Israel has to commit another mass murder against Iran, you know, because of possible Iranian terrorism, you know. It's so absurd. See, that's how they perpetrated on humankind this completely false idea about who the terrorists are. The terrorists are not Muslims. They're not Osama bin Laden. The terrorists are these psychopathic elites who have taken over our society and subverted our governments, subverted our constitutions, who creating these wars all based on lies. These are absolutely criminal wars being carried out in the Middle East now. You know, they're criminal wars. They're 1.5 million people murdered. You know, these people are psychopaths. You hear Gates, you know, he's going to go into Africa and spread his inoculations. And he thinks through doing this, he'll be able to help reduce the world's population. So this is a psychopath telling you ahead of time his distorted, disturbed intention of spreading sterilization of people or spreading diseases among people. And all that's fine. You see, the world today is like totally absurd, what's being done. It's so overtly criminal. And we have no police to turn to. The CIA is a completely corrupted terrorist organization that's mass murdered probably about 6 million people since the world wars. You know, it's completely terrorist. The Mossad's terrorist. RCMP now in Canada, they're under the control of these people. It's just terrible. And this has been done around the world. And we as a human race, we need to come together to see who our common foes are. You see, I believe that around the world, people should seize the assets of all those involved in terrorist activities. So what it would actually mean is it would pay off the debts of all the nations around the world so that all the nations' debts would be reduced to zero again. Because you would just seize all the assets from these bankers who've committed multiple mass murders and still perpetrating them, as well as all kinds of other crimes.
Yeah.
And you just seize their assets around the world. It would, you know, it would liberate the people of the world. And that this is how we could have a new age. If people around this planet, we could awaken enough to realize how our own anti-terrorist legislation could be applied to seize the assets of the real world's terrorists. Not the Muslims, but the international bankers and these Zionists and Silverstein, all these scumbags who have done these things to humankind.
Well, the system is broken.
Turn the American dream into the American nightmare. It's so disgraceful. And the Americans are such a great people. And they've been deceived so much through history. Because when Americans have been involved in these criminal wars, they've always thought that they were, you know, protecting your nation or spreading justice or spreading democracy. You didn't realize it really. You were the bullies for the New World Order scumbags. And so you, as Americans, have been completely used. And you just see how they treat your soldiers. You know, they all come home, they're murdering themselves. More soldiers commit suicide than die in the war. You know, and these people are faced with all these horrendous things they've been part of, and they know in their hearts the whole time that it's wrong. And then they can't live with what they go through, so they come back, and there's drugs and alcohol and violence, and it's just so terrible. It's the tragedy, the epic proportions of the tragedy, and how these people create all the scarcities we know. If we could get rid of these parasitic class of these aristocrats and so on, if we could get rid of these people, there would be such abundance for everybody on earth. I can really envision a new age where this will happen, and that's what I pray is going to happen.
Now,
and sometimes that's praying for it. Sometimes that's just trying to manifest my will to help bring higher forces down to turn it around on this planet and to expose these people. These people need to face the public before courts in the public arena and be exposed for the crimes they've committed. Just wait till the American people really learn what the Rockefellers have done to you for a century.
Yeah.
They'll be running down the street like George Bush Sr. said, where he said, oh, if the American people really knew what we did in Iraq, they'd be chasing us down the street to hang us. Well, they would have been. There'd be a lot of people running down the street. It's been so outrageous.
Well, that option is still open. What I want to say...
It is open, and I hope it doesn't come to that, because I'm sympathetic even to these people, because I realize in ways how people are a product of their conditioning and life experiences. And many of these people who are enlisted into Satan's armies here, like that many of these people have undergone horrific kind of conditioning and hurts and pains and abuse and so on themselves through their lives. So in a way, I'm sympathetic, and I don't believe that these people should be hung and perpetrate another cycle of violence. I think these people need to be incarcerated to protect the human race. You know, put them in the big FEMA camps. You've got some good FEMA camps in there in the States. Americans should be drawing up lists of who should be in those different FEMA camps. I thought of that as a project. Get a map of the United States, all the FEMA camps, and you can start listing in each part of the state what people should be in those FEMA camps. And then people need to start taking those lists of their policemen and begging their policemen to finally become policemen again. And instead of protecting the criminals, to actually enforce the law. People should protest to the CIA. You want the CIA to actually capture a criminal instead of protecting them and perpetrating criminal acts. See, we need the police to turn. We need the military to turn. So I guess what I think... You know, Don, I talk about working with prisoners in prisons and having an idea of awakening of consciousness and the heart in criminal offenders. I guess that's part of the influence I try to have in the kind of teaching I do, hoping to turn these people who are involved in these schemes to turn back from the direction, or for people to begin to wake up and abandon the course of action they've been on. If people began to turn, all of a sudden things could turn very quickly on these people.
Now, we've determined on more than one occasion that we can't trust the media to tell us the truth. Or this somehow there's this underlying belief that at some point they're going to be forced to tell the truth. They would only do that to save their own skins. As you were just describing, when they realize that politicians and bankers and pharmaceutical company executives and the oil cartels and the drug cartels, all these people are rounded up and put into prisons or prison camps or these concentration camps that they built intended to put us in. Then they'll realize that they're going to have to start telling the truth. But they never did tell the truth. So why should we expect them to? Now, that leads us to a point where people have to wake up and realize that they're going to have to take that responsibility themselves. Am I right in saying that?
Well, we do need to wake up and become responsible. See, the way I see human beings, like, in a way, I don't think people have a choice, because people are incapable of choice. People, as they are completely mechanical, conditioned beings. So only when we begin to wake up do we have the possibility of making choices and becoming responsible. People, as they are, can't make choices. Everything is determined by their automatic conditioning. They repeat what they've been told, what they hear on TV, and they think that's knowledge. They have no real knowledge of anything. Everything they know is really false knowledge, even about themselves. So, I think awakening and we, those of us who begin to awaken, we have to try to shoulder the responsibility of doing what we can to, that's how I feel personally, to try to help in this struggle of humankind upon this planet.
Yes.
Hopefully, now, as you say, we may have help from higher sources. And there's a lot of complexity and things behind the scene that make everything so much more complex again. As you've talked about in your last shows over the last couple of weeks about, like, aliens and not only extraterrestrials but beings within the center of the Earth and underground, and a lot of strange things are going on this planet. And I don't pretend to understand it all.
Well, I see one solution. And, you know, you use the word psychological in your title, the first word of the title of this book, Psychological Illusions, Explorations of the G.I. Gurdjieff Fourth Way Teaching by Christopher P. Holmes, Ph.D. I add there, you didn't put that in the title.
But I
want to tell people that even though that sounds like a very deep topic, and it is, it's very easy, simplistic, understandable reading. You get right to the truth of the matter, and the solutions are there, aren't they?
Well, solutions, it opens up something new in one's life. I know when I began to study the Gurdjieff teaching, it was like totally trippy in that it made life so magical and rewarding, and insights and realizations, and life took on that whole magical element. It's an amazing teaching, and we all need to do what we can to wake up. I see that as a critical thing in the life of humankind on this planet, is this process of waking up. And that's a very practical book to give people practical self-knowledge of where to start to try to understand yourself and what you are and how to study yourself as a being.
Yeah, I made a very general comment so that you could talk about it more than me. I've read excerpts of it. I've read several chapters out of it. I just got it today, actually, this afternoon, and I just dove right into it. And I've seen much of this material before and read certain of these passages because I've read about the Fourth Way. But I have to caution people not to dismiss it without looking at it, because to be self-empowered, you're not going to depend on someone else to bring you answers. The solutions are going to come to you automatically, the solutions you're looking for. He doesn't necessarily say, well, this is how you deal with the problems that you have on the earth. He's doing much more than that and showing one what our true nature is and what our connection to the creation and the rest of the universe is. And it's not real complicated. The obfuscation of the truth and the disinformation is what it makes it complex, you see? And that's what we're experiencing here. When we're lied to about what's going on in the economy, how can you grasp an understanding of the economy unless you look at the corruption, you see? And then you say, well, why are they telling us everything is okay? Why don't I have food? Or why are these people living in tents or under cardboard boxes at night? Why are people dying of certain illnesses, and they're told that they have this condition or that condition, and they're again being lied to? Why is this all going on? Because everyone else is allowing someone else or some other thing to run their lives for them. And that's not why we came here, is it?
No, it's not. And I think the most, in my view, what is most important, why we came here, is to awaken and to come to know ourselves, to understand more of this mystery of life. Because life, in a way, is nothing like what ordinarily people think it is. We're not simply biological organisms that live and die with the body. There's something much more profound happening on the planet. And I believe we lead multiple lives, and there are all kinds of higher capacities I believe human beings can develop through our many lives. So,
okay. Well, Christopher, we're out of time. Matt, there's so much I want to talk about, and we've covered a lot. If you would, please give out the information about your radio show, your website, and ways people can get your book, or books, I should say.
Yeah. Thanks, Don. My website is at www.zeropoint, spelt out, zeropoint.ca, as I'm in Canada. And my books are all available through Amazon. And, Don, I've just published a fourth one, which you're going to get in another week or so.
It's a study of
Gurdjieff's book, Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson, and it focuses on the causes of war. So I'm going to be sending that to you as a, yeah. Thank you very much for having me on today, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. You know, and this was another synchronicity because I was trying to save a date for you to come on this month, and I got an email from you just moments before I was going to send you one. So, you know, that's that connection.
Yeah.
That's exactly. The universe at work.
Yeah.
We may think it's, well, you know, I got this idea. Let me pursue this. We're being influenced by things that are going on way beyond our control.
Yeah, or understanding of the interrelatedness of things. Like how you could be having that thought, and the same time, for me, it was nice to kind of back off things, and just when I wanted to try to, I had my books coming out, and there we were at the same time, kind of doing the same thing. There's a lot of interconnectedness and interrelatedness between things that people don't understand. That's one of the main things in mystical teachings, as you emphasized before, is the interrelatedness and interconnectedness of things.
Everything is connected.
Thanks very much, Don, and thanks BBS Radio and Seth for holding on there.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show and put you on the spot, and hope you'll come back a couple of times in November, because we have to continue this discussion. This is very important.
And, I'm pleased to, Don. I appreciate it any time.
And give you the opportunity to go more into, you know, what you feel in your heart should come forth. There are solutions. You know, I talk a lot about illusions. And we have all sorts of illusions, and certainly the illusions of who we are, or the misconceptions about who we are important for everyone to understand. You've tackled that issue very well from what I've read. You know,
thank you, Don, for sharing that amazing experience you had in your second near-death experience, where you actually saw the Enneagram in a book revealed to you. That's very profound. Thank you for sharing that with me.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's much of what, even what you've written is in other types of graphic or visual diagrams that were written. I mean, it was all, it was a book about the universal laws of music.
Oh, wow.
And during that, while I was reading that, I died. You know, I didn't want to leave either. I wanted to, but I read the whole book before I left. That was what was amazing.
Wow. Thanks, Don, I'll keep listening to your show. Thank you for your work.
Okay, well,
good night.
I want to, now your website is still zeropoint.ca, is that right?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Okay, and The show
and people can order books directly from me or through Amazon.
Okay. All right. And the two books that we mentioned tonight are, I think, they're must-reads. The first being God, Science, and the Secret Doctrine, the Zero-Point Metaphysics and Holographic Space of H.P. Blavatsky, and then the second one, Psychological Illusions, Explorations of the G.I. Gurdjieff Fourth Way Teaching. That is an easy read. That is easy to understand, yet very spiritually profound. You won't be disappointed. Christopher, got to say goodnight, but thank you for being on the show, and I'm going to get you on again in November, okay? We'll be in touch soon.
Thanks, Don. Goodbye.
All right. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and tonight's special guest, Dr. Christopher Holmes, Ph.D. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network, and over at bbsradio.com, Seth Hendrick on the sound, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be former U.S. Marine Drew Malone Raines III. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.